Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 24th, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. And how are you, Dave?
Outstanding. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you back. I feel like we were going through Dave withdrawal, and we've been fixing that.
We're working on it.
That's right. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
I am both alive and dead, and until you open the box, you will not know which.
That's wonderful. I was going to say that that's sort of like Rorschach's box.
Schrodinger's Brian.
Schrodinger's Brian. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I
mispronounce it all the time.
I thought that was the Schrodinger blots. Anyhow, sometimes my jokes really don't work. But what does work is that we have a good sponsor this week, and that's Atlassian. We'll talk about them soon. And first, though, we have some big news-ish, which is that Apple has officially confirmed that they really are killing off the Thunderbolt display. And Brian, you had some choice words to say about this.
Yeah, I did. The sort of short version is that I greeted the news with a mix of sadness, contempt, and relief. And the closing line is that, so the sort of the punchline is that if Apple didn't intend to replace the Thunderbolt display, it should have killed it off a long time ago, years ago.
Don't know that they aren't, that they don't plan to replace it.
We don't know that, Dave, but did you parse their statement pretty carefully?
I did, yeah. So there's two ways to read it, right? One is that we're out of this business. And the other is, look, it's ridiculous for anyone to buy this display at this price. So we're going to, and everybody's moaning at us about it. So we're just going to go ahead and end that particular line of questioning. And maybe in the future, we've got something, but we're not ready to talk about that yet.
That would be a vast departure from what Apple normally does. Because Apple normally wouldn't discontinue a product like this that it intends to replace until it was just ready to replace it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And we're expecting, right, some kind of new Mac announcements this summer, right?
One would think.
And if we have some Mac announcements coming up, certainly by the fall, and Apple's going to kill this thing off today. And the key line here for me was there are a number of great third party options available for Mac users. That was part of Apple's statement.
Yeah,
that's the part that has me thinking Apple is just done with a standalone display market.
Yeah,
but see, I think
to Dave's point, though, we don't know.
We're taking our multiple decade experience with how Apple PR speaks and applying that to this statement.
And yes, we are.
Yeah, fair enough, Dave. I guess that was my mistake.
Well, no. But here's the thing. Like, the last 2 years, Apple PR is a different beast.
Yes, it's true.
Right? You know, the fact that they've made this statement in this way is completely new for them. Everything's new, and I would argue that better. It's better. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I could nitpick and say some things are worse, but I would have to stop and nitpick, and probably would be wrong, or at least able to be proven wrong pretty quickly with some of those. I think it really is better. They're a more open company than they used to be, and so this sort of casual, I think. What I'm saying is we're reading too much into this. If this was from Katie Cotton's Apple PR, which is the PR director that worked alongside, I was going to say under Steve Jobs, but really it was alongside Steve Jobs to craft Apple's image for so many years, this would mean so much more out of that version of Apple PR than it does out of this version of Apple PR.
But for even all of which is certainly in the world of possibility. Mm-hmm. And your cautionary tale is well taken. However, it's hard to find any kind of rational position where Apple is planning to replace it, yet makes this move and issues this statement. So yeah, from a business perspective, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it would have to be like there. It would have to be a year off, right? If they're going to do something, I can't imagine it would be. Oh, and by the way, in September, here you go. Right? That doesn't compute.
Right.
If they're going to do that, then they would have just hung on and heads down a little bit longer, and now we're good to go. But now, you know, we've been playing with an idea. It's not anywhere that we'd want it to be yet. So we're just going to say we have nothing. And, you know, then when we have something, we'll say we have something.
Yeah. Apple could have dropped a price on the darn thing. You know, that's part of what was really offended me about the Mac Pro and the Thunderbolt display is that they were still selling for the price that they were introduced at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can get substantially better displays for a fraction of the cost.
And computers.
Yeah.
Going back to the Mac Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true.
So, you know, the real question, I think that John's going to explore this today. John Martellaro is going to explore this in his particle debris column today. But the real question is, does this herald or presage anything for the Mac Pro?
Yeah, that's a good question. Is Apple going to get out of the desktop Pro market?
Kind of seems that way.
It seems so weird that Apple did this major redesign of the Mac Pro.
Built a plant for it,
dropped it in our laps, and then just walked away from it.
Built a plant in the U.S. for it.
Yeah. And they've done nothing with it since it was introduced. So we're talking about a computer that's 2 years old, and there's no word on what its future will be. It just seems really weird.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's where Apple's focus isn't, right? Their focus is everywhere but that.
Yeah, this is part of John Keats. We talked about this yesterday on Steve Sandy and Mark Fuccio and I on Chuck Joyner's show. I don't think he's published it yet, but we talked about this somewhat from the standpoint of John Keats' position that Apple has failed to scale, and then Apple has not found a way to, while it's moving its A team onto new projects, to allow a B team to maintain and to maintain the you know, the sort of existing product lines.
You know, there was a piece that Mr. John C. Dvorak put out, and maybe this factors into some of the reasoning he puts in there, but I don't want to derail us into another topic yet, Jeff.
Yet, but that was really good.
Thanks.
Do you guys have any more thoughts that you want to share on the displays? Because if not,
yeah, it's one last thing. It's just so weird. I've got my 5K iMac here that I'm looking at while we record this.
It's luscious.
It is luscious. It's just this amazing display, and Apple makes it, and yet Apple can't make one without the iMac guts attached to it. It's weird. It's really, really weird to me.
Yeah, the Mac Mini is there's this major gap between the Mac Mini and the iMac, and you have to buy a screen to get the latter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, take this. Fine. You can't make a 5K display because there are connectivity issues, right? Because Apple had to do some magic to make the 5K display work with the iMac.
Sure.
Right? So fine. Make a breakout box that's got the thing that you need that will talk to Thunderbolt on the Mac Pro and talk to the display too. I mean, I think that we as customers would merrily accept that.
We merrily accepted it with the very first cinema display with the big honking.
Yeah, with the big thing in the
$150 breakout box that thank goodness still runs for me, because I have a 5K iMac, and then next to it I have the original, you know, gray Lucite 23-inch cinema display that still requires one of those breakout boxes to work.
Oh man, you're rocking it old school.
Well, I am.
You know, Dave, I had to give up that 23-inch studio display is what it was called, right?
Studio display. Is that right? Is that what it was called?
The acrylic was studio display. When they went to the aluminum bezel, that's when it became cinema display.
Thank you. Okay. But, yeah. Yeah.
So I also had to replace my breakout box, and then I had some of my LEDs go out on that thing. But we got those at the exact same time.
Yeah, I know. I know. There were three of them that we got. Actually, four. We sold off one. Greg Snyder took one, and then you and I each took one. And I think this is the only one left in service. I've already decided it. You know, when it dies, it doesn't owe me anything. I mean, we're talking what, 15 years old that this display is?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I had to replace that breakout box too.
Right. I can't remember if I've had to replace my breakout box or not. I seem to remember looking on eBay for them, but I don't know if that was for me, you, or Greg.
Well, I ended up getting one from Dr. Bond.
Oh, so it definitely was
also no longer with us.
Also no longer a company with us. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, and my 23-inch cinema display, it's still going strong. And the only reason it's not on my desk is because, you know, I went to the 34-inch curved display and I moved the 23-incher off to someone that actually really needed to have something that could show them good color. And it's still going great.
Yeah, well, sorry. So one last point here. Speaking of your 34-inch curved display, which is a work of art.
Oh, my God, yes.
Right? It's beautiful, for sure. And I was sort of torn. One of the things I said is that Mac users will be, this is in my piece, that Mac users will be forced to live with the stylings of HP, Dell, and Samsung for their external display needs, like an animal. Mm-hmm. And now I said that, you know, the 34-inch HP display is certainly a good-looking device.
It is. It looks pretty slick on my desk, and I put it on a Visa mount arm, and it went from looking really nice to being sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that's some pretty good animal living.
Yeah, I'm okay with my animalistic life. I can cope with this. Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor, and our sponsor is Atlassian. And I think it's pretty cool that they're sponsoring us because they make software that makes your life easier when you have projects that you need to collaborate on. So if you need to, as part of your project, make sure everyone can communicate no matter where they are, well, then you use HipChat. And if you need to do tracking for bugs or assigning elements of a project to specific people and managing all the tasks that need to happen, then you throw in Jira. And let's say it's a coding project and you need to be able to keep track of all of the code elements you're creating and versioning and all of that, that's Bitbucket. And then what makes all of this really cool is that Atlassian did this in a way so that all the pieces just blend together. So you get this very natural feeling, seamless system where everything that matters for a project is just right there in front of you and it's easy to work with. And it's just awesome. So you should go check them out. Head over to their website, atlassian.com, and that's atlassian.com. It's easier to say than spell, atlassian.com. And check out their products, Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket, because I'm betting there's a good chance that whatever projects you're working on, they have a tool that's going to help you out. So, Atlassian, thank you for being our sponsor. All right, so the other topic I wanted to hit today, Dave, you gave everyone a little bit of foreshadowing. Is it time to spin off the Mac and have a separate company just for the Mac hardware?
Yeah, so this is from John C. Dvorak writing online for PC Magazine, doing what John C. Dvorak has been known for years, which is writing a mildly, or perhaps more than mildly, incendiary column, which he wrote on the back page of of this magazine and I guess I think others, right? Didn't he write for, I don't know, I forget.
I think he's written for some other people along the way.
But this is what John Dvorak does, and this is like classic Dvorak. But he makes a reasoned argument. It starts with the renaming of OS X to Mac OS. He says back to Mac OS, which is a fair thing to say, although there's some grammatical differences between the old Mac OS and the new Mac OS. Mm-hmm. But his reasoning for it is much different than Apple's. Apple's was sort of the obvious, well, we've got all these things, tvOS, iOS, watchOS, and OS X, so it should be Mac OS, and now we've got this consistent product line for our operating systems. His was that, well, you know, PC sales are sort of a dead thing, and Apple itself would be better not selling Macs, but they could spin off a company that did sell Macs and retain at least 50% of that company so that no other company could come in and take over, you know, or anything like that. But it would allow this company to sort of, it would contract with Apple for, you know, placement on the shelves in Apple stores and all of this stuff, but it keeps it off of the books of Apple Inc. in terms of their main products and all of that.
So he wants to FileMaker the Mac.
He wants to Lexmark the Mac, right? It's, right, well, that's his words, you know, as opposed to Lenovoing the Mac, right? Which is what IBM did with their ThinkPads, which is they actually sold that division. Whereas so FileMakering the Mac, that's essentially it. And you know, like I said, he's got some well reasoned points that he makes, and I don't think that's the reason he wrote the article.
It's one of the less trollish troll pieces he's written.
It is, but it follows his troll formula, and there's a great video of him, and it's from a while back. I'll find it and put it in. We'll put it in the show notes. But yes, he was talking to Dave Weiner at some trade show. It's only like a 80-second long video where he explains what he does. Is he finds a group of passionate fans, and Apple fans are an easy target for this. Certainly back when he was having this conversation, which was like 10 years ago, but still now. And he says you come up with something that totally lights them on fire. You know, that absolutely grinds their gears, and you just let them like froth all over it and share it far and wide, and then a couple of weeks later or a couple of months later even, you write an article refuting your original position, instantly going back, you know, backtracking everything, and then everybody's going to froth all about it because you're saying you're disagreeing with yourself. And he's like, you get double the traffic, it works out really well, and that's his formula.
John C. Dvorak is a genius at what he does, and he's managed his career brilliantly, and yep, hats off to him. This particular piece, like I said, it's one of the least trollish troll pieces he's written.
But it is a troll piece.
Mm-hmm. But it is a troll piece. And, you know, it ignores so many little bits of reality. For instance, the benefits that Apple has tying in the Mac to iOS. The fact that they share a lot of development, you know, splitting off the company would you know, obviate that. Mm-hmm. And the Mac makes tons of money.
Right.
Why would Apple want to get rid of this market where they actually make lots of money?
Right. Well, they wouldn't be, right? They would just be compartmentalizing it and letting it run on its own.
Well, he made the case to get it off the books.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And, you know, the PC market
is dying.
Yeah,
they're not losing money at this. They're just not seeing the growth there.
But they're seeing growth where the rest of the world is actually seeing shrinkage.
That's true.
You know, and plus, what are Apple engineers going to use to and designers going to use to make the iPhones with? That was always my biggest reason for anyone who thought that Apple would just kill off the Mac.
They could buy them from maccomputers.com.
They could probably get a discount, too. All right, so what I'm picking up here, Brian, is that you're not ready to drink the Dvorak juice and spin off the Mac.
For the record, I will never be ready to drink the Dvorak juice.
Okay, that's going in a tweet somewhere.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's also going into a podcast right now.
That's right.
Yeah, and hey, on that exciting note, we are out of time. So, Brian, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I think.
Oh, sure. And when I say exciting note, what I really mean is kind of disturbing note. Anyhow, Dave, thank you for being here too.
Thanks for disturbing me.
Oh, sure. It's what I do best. And Atlassian, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, atlassian.com, and check out their great project management and collaboration tools. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again next week.